Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. It's Bill Bartholomew here with you for new episodes every Tuesday and Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or ripodcast.com. Today, we have an important conversation with the Rhode Island Department of Health's Dr. Philip Chan. And of course, look, it's been on everybody's mind for months now, particularly here in Rhode Island over the past few weeks, the vaccine rollout. And that's a question that has had a number of different angles to it. Of course, there's the component of this that's the federal distribution aspect. Then, of course, there's the state distribution aspect. And it was just a few weeks ago that Rhode Island received an F grade from Harvard University. We were ranked, 50th out of 50 by the New York Times in terms of our vaccine distribution program. Those numbers are improving. Just this week, the Department of Health opened up vaccines to folks who are 65 and over. But there are still a lot of unanswered questions. Let's be honest about it. A lot of unanswered questions. So that's why we're fortunate to have Dr. Chan here on the podcast today to discuss some of those outlying questions and kind of where we're heading, you know what I mean, for different age groups, different occupations. What does the summer really look like? All of these types of things that are they're floating around there. Of course, I also get into what's it like working in a situation where you have outgoing Governor Raimondo and incoming Governor Dan McKee, Lieutenant Governor McKee. I don't want to say competing for who's going to be the face of the state right now, but frankly, in terms of the perspective of many Rhode Islanders, there's a back and forth that is uncomfortable and perhaps even inappropriate to have the type of bilateral governance that we're experiencing right now. Dan McKee, he said it on Friday night. I was on the Zoom call for the Dan McKee team, the transition team, and McKee said, look, I'm an incoming governor. I'm not a governor. And that means that it all falls on Governor Raimondo's lap right now. But in this particular conversation, how does that all impact the vaccine rollout? So we get into that today and a whole bunch more here on Rhode Island's podcast of record, the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
A safe, affordable place to call home is the American dream. But too many Rhode Island families, seniors, and veterans are struggling to find a home or apartment they can afford, especially during the COVID pandemic. You can help change that by voting yes on question 3 to invest $65 million in the construction and preservation of affordable homes and apartments across Rhode Island. Vote yes on 3 for homes, for jobs, for Rhode Island. Learn more at yeson3ri.com. Paid for by Yes on 3.
I guess let's get right into it. The big issue right now is vaccine, really vaccine distribution. There's a lot of layers to this, obviously the federal dissemination of vaccine, and then the particulars of distribution here in the state. This week, we shifted to allowing for 65 and over to get on the portal and register. And I've heard from some people who have said, hey, look, it worked quite well. I was able to make an appointment for my parents, or I myself was able to. Some other people said they had trouble, but it does seem like by and large, things are starting to come together after a trying period where, frankly, members of the media and the general public were giving a lot of pushback to the vaccination rollout. So I guess where are we right now, and are we in a better place than we were a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah. So first off, I just want to thank people for their patience as we roll out this vaccine. I mean, we've never done anything like this before. No one has. So it's new to all of us. And we've had to build up the infrastructure from scratch, like the distribution channels, the processes, et cetera, et cetera. So it has taken some time. I think all states have struggled with this. And if you look at what other states too have done, I mean, all states have really had challenges related to this. I think in our first general rollout of the vaccine, we were doing it in a much more targeted approach. We were focusing on higher risk populations. And I'll just say, it has been frustrating to some degree that we haven't pushed vaccine out as fast, I think, as other states. But on the flip side, I've also been reassured personally nationally, that we've seen one of the largest reductions in hospitalizations across the country. And we certainly attribute some of that to the vaccine rollout. I mean, in the last couple of months, we've seen an over 70% reduction in hospitalizations. And we believe that our targeted approach to vaccinations has led to that in part. But to your point, Bill, I will say, of course, that now we're entering a different phase of the vaccine rollout, and we're focusing more on speed and getting doses out. And so just in the last week, I think, we were sort of last in the nation, frankly, in terms of doses administered. And now we're in the middle of the pack after a week, week and a half. So we've already jumped up, made incredible gains, and we anticipate that those will continue in the next couple of weeks as well.
There's no question that the situation in terms of the status of the governor situation, for lack of a better term, there's no question it's at least optically a challenge. Perhaps it's a challenge as well from an internal managerial standpoint. You know, too many cooks in the kitchen, who's in charge, all these types of questions. And it certainly has come up time and time again as possibly being linked to Rhode Island's rollout of the vaccine, not necessarily in December, but certainly in January, as some of the confusion and the poor performance, if you will, via Harvard and the New York Times and so on and so forth. In your opinion now, though, are we in an okay place? Is there sufficient communication between the governor and the incoming governor? And how much does that actually affect what's happening on the ground with vaccine distribution?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So I think we've been tremendously lucky to have Governor Raimondo. I think she's done a good job. She's been very data-driven, evidence-focused, public health-focused, and really pushed us, both in testing, now in vaccination. So I do think we're in a good place. Likewise, we've been working closely with McKee and his administration and incoming staff. I think it's going to be a pretty seamless transition personally. I think the media has picked up on some, back and forth, some disagreements, et cetera. I think some of that's normal. I mean, you have a new group of people coming in. I think that they're going to be just as committed to addressing COVID. We all are with the same goal in mind of getting through this pandemic. So there'll be some different opinions here and there. I think at the end of the day, though, everyone, regardless of it's whoever it is that we do need to continue to focus on the data and the evidence and the science and the public health. And that includes for vaccine distribution. And I think, we want to be, we've always prided ourselves on being one of the best states in the country in terms of getting things done during this pandemic in terms of testing. And I think you're going to see that over the next month, next couple of weeks, for sure, with vaccinations already. We've already made huge strides in that regard.
What about from there's a key difference, I suppose, with respect to the McKee camp and their vision for more of a municipal oriented rollout, and even having Bob Walsh, the NEARI head, on the board of the transition team, so to speak. There's a renewed sense that occupational requirements may be included in moving forward with vaccine distribution. So from a physical site perspective, and also from amending the current rollout list, do you sense that's going to come up? And what do you know about that? What should people who are frontline workers or teachers or anybody who doesn't necessarily fit into an age category kind of have in the back of their mind right now as a new administration is likely no more than a few weeks away?
Well, I think we've always considered the cities and towns critical partners. I mean, the city and town leaders, municipalities know their community the best, and we've always considered them important partners and been working with them to do many things, from testing to K-12 to now vaccination, et cetera, PPE distribution. So it would be great to have them more involved. I think it's a balance, though. We've also heard feedback from the community in general that people want a one-stop, online portal to vaccinate as well. And I think we wanted to try to make things as simple and as smooth as possible at the end of the day. I do think we obviously need to engage the cities and towns, and we need as the state government, as the Department of Health, we do need to listen to them and to help get buy-in from the community as well. So those are some of the considerations, and we're working through it again. Nothing like this has ever been done, but we're gonna do our best. And I do think we need to make it simple for people so that people can generally understand and reduce as many barriers as possible. And that's been one of our goals as well.
Yeah, even from an interface perspective, just as simple as possible, you know, especially when you're dealing with a crowd that is in that 75 and even 65 plus, where frankly, even in any age group, there are people who technology is not necessarily their forte, and particularly navigating web portals, it's something maybe that they have only done on a handful of occasions. What about for someone like me, someone like you? I mean, I obviously not you because you're in the medical field. So, but someone who is in their 30s or 40s, and you know, what sort of window should they be kind of looking at? Is summer realistic for vaccine opportunity?
Summer is realistic. And I do want to reassure people, I think we're in a little bit of a tough time for the last month for this vaccine rollout, in that we just have a short supply. And that's why we have to prioritize. You know, it really is a no-win situation. You know, we want everyone to get vaccinated. And I've been thrilled that so many people want to get vaccinated. It's really a win from the public health side, but we're really just supply constrained. And I think to your point, I've been just really reassured, certainly as the new Washington administration has come on board, you know, manufacturing increases, you know, for Pfizer, Moderna, you know, increased doses on the way. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine, you know, the FDA is meeting this week. We hope to have that maybe in the first week of March, et cetera. So I think that the vaccine lines are anticipated to increase. And I think all Rhode Islanders will have the chance to be vaccinated, certainly by early summer would be my guess. So I'm very optimistic about that. Just asking people to be patient for just a little bit longer. We're almost there.
As someone who absolutely loves summer, and probably it's one of the main reasons why I moved back to Rhode Island from New York, it's a theory. It's a statement that we've heard a few times from Governor Raimondo and echoed by Dr. Alexander Scott. We're going to have a great Rhode Island summer. Do you see us getting to a point where, I'm not saying without masks on or, you know, within reason, I guess, we'll be able to have a summer where people can go to the beach, they can play golf, they can go explore in the woods, and even go back to the old barbecue and the 4th of July situation if people are being smart? Is that something realistic?
I think it's totally realistic, and I'm optimistic about that. And frankly, I'm looking forward to having my first barbecue myself during the summer. But absolutely, I think, you know, to your point, I think that we may need to adjust slightly. Maybe it's masking. I think one thing that I've been impressed with just during this pandemic, as evidence has emerged and the science has progressed, is the importance of ventilation and, of course, being outside. So as we talk about summer and people going outside for the, you know, the barbecues or the, you know, the beaches, like that would be perfect. At the very least, that is what is going to happen, in my estimation. I'm very optimistic about that for sure.
We've seen some reduced restrictions, and the early indications based on the numbers right now would suggest that we're in an okay spot. You know, when you look at the total cases and or reported cases, confirmed cases of COVID over the last few weeks, there's definitely some question marks around opening bars and expanding indoor dining and things like that, but it's a balancing act. And I think most people have come to understand that. I spoke with the Hospitality Association last week, and they said, look, we're going to we're developing workshops for all of our business owners to present to their employees who may be concerned about the reality of expanded capacity. Here's how you manage that. Here's how you manage people from an emotional standpoint, and here's the best practices from an epidemiological standpoint. But does this make your life harder, opening up bars and things like this, or are we in a place where it can be managed?
I still think that we, Rhode Island, and not just Rhode Island, by the way, the entire country, we are still in a little bit of a tenuous spot. You know, we have these variants that are emerging. They tend to be, you know, from what we've seen, it's that they tend to be more easily transmitted. They may have a higher, you know, cause people to be more sick at a higher rate, et cetera. So we have to be incredibly careful. I have been reassured that the vaccines, at least the Pfizer and Moderna, appear to have good activity and prevention against these variants. So that's definitely reassuring. But given these variants are a little bit more aggressive compared to what we've seen, we still need to be a little bit careful in general. And that includes masking and physical distancing and ventilation and, you know, avoiding gatherings, et cetera. So we are in a much better place for sure over the last couple of months. I still think we need to be careful in general. But I think, you know, if we do things right, and we've seen this again in the K-12 system, if we really pay close attention to some of these public health strategies, I mean, they work. And so that's the good news. And people can relax a little bit, but we still need to be guarded and careful in general.
From Mario Hilario to Sheldon Whitehouse, from the issues of the day to the big picture questions facing the Ocean State, discover hundreds of episodes of Rhode Island's podcast of record, B-Town, wherever you're listening right now. We're about to approach the one-year anniversary of COVID-19 in Rhode Island, and I'll never forget it. I think it was a Sunday morning, and I remember waking up and having the media advisory to get to, I think it was the Department of Administration, the basement there, and you go in and you just knew something, that this was a story, this was a situation that was way bigger than a two-week, two-month scenario. You just felt it in the room. And over the next few weeks, it started to become more and more clear that we were dealing with something that will be mentioned in history books for sure. How's that been for you emotionally, and what has it changed in your vision, not necessarily your personal approach, but your vision of what public health policy should look like going forward?
Yeah, so thank you for the question. You know, I think it's been incredibly challenging for many of us, and certainly for those of us in the healthcare field. I mean, I just know for the first 4 months, I was called into action. I've been on staff at some of the major hospitals. I've been a practicing infectious disease physician. I gave up some of that to work at the Department of Health, called in to work many hours as the rest of the team at the Department of Health. And for the first 4 or 5 months, we were working 15, 16 hours a day, through weekends. I mean, it was an unsustainable pace. And I know a lot of my colleagues in healthcare, similarly, have been working ridiculous hours in the hospital, et cetera. I mean, we had to open up a field hospital. I mean, that's ridiculous if you think of it. We had to open an entire, two separate hospitals to address this pandemic. So I think for all of us in the healthcare field and public health field, I mean, it's been incredibly challenging. It's really been a team effort. And at this point, there's hundreds, thousands of people in the response across the state, across the hospital systems. It's really been amazing to see us come together. So it's been challenging. It's been tiresome. I do think the end is in sight. And that's one of the things that keeps me going personally. I am also waiting for that barbecue, as we talked about, in the summer. I do think that there will be a degree of getting back to normal by then. And that's what gives me hope personally. But there's been a lot of lessons learned. And like I like to tell some of my friends, I mean, if I get through this pandemic, I mean, we'll be pretty much able to handle anything after this, right?
Right. Let's hope so. Let's hope this is the maximum, the pedals all the way to the floor. Let's put it that way. Last couple of questions. So there's a lot of people from other countries here in Rhode Island. I mean, frankly, in the United States, everywhere. What about international travel? Is that something to be extra careful with right now? I mean, of course, it's something to be extra careful with, but beyond the parameters of common sense with respect to ventilation, masking, and so on and so forth, is there an extra risk right now to traveling to South America or to Europe or anywhere else on the planet?
Yeah, so I guess my personal take on this is that, I was a world traveler. I love to travel. I would travel internationally, every chance I could get. And since the pandemic, I haven't even flown on a plane once since, January 2020. I do think that some discretion is required, and especially with these emerging variants that we've seen around the world. I mean, people just need to be careful. They need to avoid, enclosed spaces with lots of people, whether or not that be, indoor restaurants or other sort of assemblies. And that's advice not just for the United States, but that's advice for any country. And so obviously when you travel, whether it be by bus or plane or et cetera, tend to be in close contact, close vicinity of a lot of other people. So I think there's some innate risk to traveling. I think it could be done safely. People need to use their discretion. And certainly as things start to abate, I heard the other day that hotels are booked up for the summer, like travel is being booked up and people are playing on it. And I think that's, a sign of hope, and it's great. But again, just cautioning people to not open up things too soon and use some judicious, reasonable judgment, I think, as you're suggesting, so that we don't find ourselves back in with higher transmission rates.
How much I don't know the right word for this. I want to say naysayers. You could even say spreaders of misinformation, but pundits in particular, media pundits locally and globally that are spreading misinformation and pushing for hyper reopening right now, or suggesting that we're at a point where that if someone's vaccinated they ought not wear a mask. It's all of these talking points that are floating around. Sometimes I hear them in the car on the radio or something like that. And I'm just thinking, like, what, how much damage is this doing right now to the work that is going on in your world? Is that something you're concerned about? And why do you think it is that people are almost presenting these shock value type opinions about where we're actually at with COVID?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I think one thing that we've been fighting against, and one reason why I'm here today and just do these in general, is to spread science and data and facts. And I think one of the things that's just troubled me about our society in general is the focus on misinformation, is the focus on myths and et cetera. And I think that does a real detriment to our society in general, because then you don't know what to believe, and that's part of the problem. And so, you know, this is the United States of America. You're free to believe what you believe. No one's going to force you to get a vaccine. Et cetera. But, you know, the decision, for example, to get vaccinated should be based on science and data and evidence. And if you know all that and you decide not to get it for one reason or the other, then I'm okay with that personally. But, you know, if you decide not to get it because you think it's going to make you sterile or walk backwards or something like that, I mean, that's not okay with me, because that's based on total fiction and myth and misinformation. And I think the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that we are one people. We are one community. And I'm 42 years of age. I have zero past medical history. I run every day. I'm at really low risk of dying or getting really sick from COVID. That being said, I got vaccinated to protect people in my household, people around me, my parents who are over 65. So I think sometimes we have to think a little bit broader than me, myself. If you're in your 20s and 30s, the data also shows that you're at really low risk, right, of being really sick from COVID. But the point is that to protect our community, to protect others in our society, I think people need to make a serious consideration about getting the vaccine, for example, or doing other public health things, wearing a mask, not necessarily to protect them, but to protect the others who are more vulnerable in our society. And we all have parents, we all have grandparents, older adults in our life. And frankly, you know, the higher mortality rate is one reason, at least for me, that I do some of these things.
Dr. Philip Chan, the Rhode Island Department of Health. And let's hope that we have that summer. I mean, I'm banking on it mentally. Most, you know, obviously no one's going to hold it against anybody if it is what it is if we don't. But I feel studying these trends, living within this story for almost a year, we're in a decent spot right now. It's okay to be hopeful.
I agree. And I want to echo that. I do think that this is a light at the end of the tunnel. I like to think about this as the fourth quarter of a basketball game. I think we're getting there. We're down the home stretch, just asking people to be a little bit patient till the summer. I do believe that that things will get much better by then.
Rhode Island's podcast of record, B-Town.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.